The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's stories include IRS backlog of 6.7 million tax returns delays refunds, and relief payments are on the way, IRS announces. Along with daylight savings time, this weekend brought some Americans fatter bank balances. Officials at the Treasury Department and Internal Revenue Service said last Friday that processing of the new rounds of stimulus payments has already begun, with first payments showing up in bank accounts last weekend. President Joe Biden signed the new $1.9 trillion rescue package last Thursday, the day after it won final passage in the House. The measure provides for payments to qualifying individuals of up to $1,400, with payments to a qualifying family of four of $5,600. The payments will be delivered automatically to taxpayers, even as the IRS continues delivering regular tax refunds, IRS Commissioner Chuck Redig said in a statement. It is estimated that 85% of Americans will be eligible for the payments, and the goal is to have millions of the payments disbursed in the next few weeks. The relief measure, which passed on party line votes in both the House and Senate, contains the third round of economic impact payments. The first round, passed last spring, provided up to $1,200 per individual, and a second round of payments in December provided up to $600 per individual. The latest package passed with no votes from Republicans, who objected to the size of the measure and argued it was not necessary given signs that the economy is beginning to recover. Then-President Donald Trump called the payments and the $900 billion relief passed in December too small, and Biden agreed, pushing for the total for an individual up to $1,400 in the new package. The latest round of relief payments will provide households with $1,400 for each adult, child, and adult dependent, such as college students or elderly relatives. Adult dependents were not eligible to receive payments in the previous two rounds of payments. The payments start declining for an individual once adjusted gross income exceeds $75,000 and go to zero once income hits $80,000. The payment starts declining for married couples when income exceeds $150,000 and goes to zero at $160,000. Name your favorite woman-owned triangle businesses. Are you a woman who owns a business? Is one of your favorite businesses owned by women? The News and Observer wants to hear from you. For Women's History Month, we're celebrating the women-led and women-founded businesses throughout the Triangle, and we need your help. We're putting together a list of women-owned companies, businesses, restaurants, and more in the area. This list will connect you to local businesses and offer a platform to hear what local business women have to say. If you're a woman who owns a business in the area, fill out a form to be included in our list. If there's a woman-owned business you know and love, send the form to them or fill it out on their behalf. Submit your entry by 5 p.m. Wednesday, March 24th. Enter your submission by going to this form at http://bit.com. bit.ly/triangle business. IRS backlog of 6.7 million tax returns delays refunds. Nearly 7 million tax filers are in limbo and facing substantial delays in getting refunds so far this tax filing season, as the Internal Revenue Service struggles to keep up with the demands of issuing stimulus checks and implementing myriad tax code changes from coronavirus relief packages, including the one President Biden signed this week. There are 6.7 million returns that have not yet been processed, more than three times the number in the same period last year, when fewer than 2 million returns faced delays, delayed processing, IRS data show. The delays are largely a result of a year's worth of stimulus measures that have created more complicated tax returns for millions of Americans. The IRS was already straining to adjust after the December stimulus package. The newest package, the American Rescue Plan, adds even more tasks for the agency, including sending another round of one-time payments, making changes to tax rules to help unemployed workers, and paying out a new child tax benefit. Many Americans who did not receive the correct stimulus payments in January or last year are filing for additional money now. And some low-income filers are newly eligible for more tax credits than usual. The IRS is having to manually review a lot of these returns, a slow process that is delaying refunds for millions of low-income families, after the agency has faced a decade's worth of budget cuts and staffing losses. More than 100 people still waiting for the IRS to process their returns reached out to share their stories with the Washington Post. Most filed electronically on February 12th when the IRS opened tax filing season. A month later, many of these early filers are still waiting for their returns to be processed. Next, experts predict that Americans will play it safe with stimulus money. The first coronavirus relief checks were for $1,200. The second one's $600. And now payments of $1,400 per person are officially due to be sent March 17th by direct deposit, the week of March 22nd, paper checks, and the week of March 29th, EIP cards. What will you do with the money? Last Thursday, President Joe Biden signed into law the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan, which, in addition to boosting the amount of the relief payment, expanded eligibility to include dependents over age 16. To qualify for the full payments, adjusted gross income must be less than $75,000 for individuals and $150,000 for married couples filing jointly. The government-issued checks have been popularly called stimulus payments, though the funds primarily have been intended to replace money lost in the collapse of the economy rather than to stimulate demand. People have been careful with the funds every round, and it looks like they'll play it pretty safe this time, too. Much of the $1,200 checks issued in the first round as part of the CARES Act did not generate spending sprees. The National Bureau of Economic Research found that almost 60% of the money went to pay down debt or into savings. Researchers at the University of Chicago found that households on average spent 40% of the first check, mostly for food, beauty items, and other products that people hoarded in the early days of the pandemic. Little went to purchases like cars or appliances. Economists reason that with lockdowns in place last spring, there were far fewer options for spending the money. A survey in early January by Bankrate.com found that 71% of people said the second round $600 checks they expected to receive for every adult and dependent child in the household would only sustain their financial well-being for less than a month. 4 in 10 people surveyed said they would put the funds toward monthly bills, such as rent or mortgage payments and utility bills. Almost 5 million people in Illinois age 18 and older said someone in their house received a relief payment in the previous 7 days, according to data collected by the Census Bureau between February 17th and March 1st. Of those who detailed their plans, almost 2.4 million said it would be mostly used to pay off debt. With the third round of relief payments, Bank of America anticipates more of the funds will be saved in one way or another, not spent. In its survey of 3,000 people in late February, only 36% of respondents said they planned to spend the money. The rest had other plans. 9% planned to invest it, 25% would save it, and 30% would use it to pay off debts. Yellen says U.S. inflation risk remains small. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said U.S. inflation risk remains subdued as the Biden administration pumps $1.9 trillion in pandemic relief into the economy, and a return to full employment comes into view. Is there a risk of inflation? I think there's a small risk, and I think it's manageable, Yellen said on ABC's This Week on Sunday. Some prices that fell last year when the COVID-19 pandemic spread through the U.S. will recover, but that's a temporary movement in prices, she said. I don't think it's a significant risk, said Yellen, a former Federal Reserve chair, and if it materializes, we'll certainly monitor for it, but we have tools to address it. Biden on Thursday signed into law the pandemic relief package, which provides funding for vaccinations and delivering aid to households, businesses, and state and local governments. Yellen and other officials insist the aid, which comes on top of pandemic relief passed by Congress last year, is badly needed for an economy slammed by COVID-19, particularly low-income workers heavily represented in service industries despite signs of recovery. While U.S. unemployment remains high, especially when including people who have dropped out of the labor force in the past year, job creation has returned. Employers added 379,000 new positions in February, more than expected. Applications for U.S. jobless benefits fell by more than forecast last week to the lowest since early November, the Labor Department reported Thursday. I'm hopeful that if we defeat the pandemic, that if we can have the economy back near full employment next year, Yellen said Sunday, and I think this is the package we need to do that. Republicans have objected to the stimulus package's size, and even some liberal economists, such as former Treasury Secretary Lawrence Summers, have questioned, whether its spending is excessive, given that the broader economy has been remarkably resilient. If you put too much water in the bathtub, it starts to overflow, Summers said Sunday on CNN about the scale of the stimulus. We're trying to pour too much water in. While saying her views on fiscal sustainability have shifted in an era of persistently low interest rates, Yellen said, in the longer run, we have to get deficits under control. Next, Wake County expands rent and utility aid with $33 million in federal funding. Wake County has begun accepting applications for its rental assistance program with $33 million in federal funding from the COVID-19 stimulus package, passed in by Congress in late December. Due to its large population, the federal government allocated $19 million in rental assistance directly to Wake County and $14 million to the city of Raleigh from the nationwide amount of $25 billion in rental assistance passed in the December stimulus. Both the city and county have approved these funds to be administered through the House Wake COVID-19 Financial Assistance Program, which began back in late September with $6 million in Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, or CARES, funding. Due to that limited funding, the county initially only covered rent and utility payments for 6 months and required that the landlord agreed to provide a 25% discount in rent for the subsequent 3 months. "We were trying to stretch the dollar as far as we possibly could," said Lorena McDowell, Wake County's Housing Department Director, in an interview with the NNO. McDowell said the three-month period was to help tenants facing eviction after CARES Act funding expired at the end of December and until Congress passed more COVID-19 stimulus. With the increase in federal funding, the county is now able to pay back rent and utility payments going back to April of last year and up to 12 months in future payments. The three-month discount stipulation for landlords is no longer required. These changes are partly due to federal guidelines that require them and because of the increase in funding, McDowell said. "We're excited that we're able to help more renters," she said. "We're excited that we'll be able to do more for our landlords that are also really struggling in this time." The program had received 2,492 applications before it stopped accepting them on January 31st. Since the county started accepting again on Monday, it has received over 300 applications, according to data from the county. Tenants in Wake County can apply for the rent and utility assistance at housewake.org. Tenants can also apply by calling 919-899-9911 or emailing housing@telamon.org. To be eligible for the assistance, the tenant household must be 80% or below the area median income, which is just over $80,000 in Wake County as of 2019, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. Wake County will prioritize those at 50% or less of the median income. Tenants must have previously qualified for unemployment payments, had an income loss, or incurred some other financial hardship due to the pandemic. The county is also providing utility assistance for electric, water, sewer, gas, oil, trash, recycling, and internet. Tenants must recertify eligibility every 3 months due to federal requirements. Additional assistance after the first 3 months is also dependent on funding. If a tenant is accepted, Wake County will provide for all rent and utility costs for the first 3 months. After those first 3 months, those over 50% of the area median income must begin paying 30% of the cost while the county covers the rest. For those below the 50% threshold, the county will continue to cover all of the cost. People can apply for assistance for only utilities, and the county will cover all of those costs regardless of income. Rent and utility payments from the county go directly to landlords and utility companies. If a landlord does not agree to the rent assistance, the county will provide free legal services for tenants in the partnership with Legal Aid of North Carolina. On Thursday, President Joe Biden signed the American Rescue Plan Act, which includes another $21.6 billion in rent assistance. Wake County and the City of Raleigh will receive a not-yet-specified amount of that funding as well. Governor Roy Cooper signed State HB 196 on Thursday. A part of that bill allocates the $546.5 million in the December federal stimulus that went directly to North Carolina. As part of the bill, Wake County will receive another $16.8 million from the state. Some state officials and affordable housing advocates have criticized HB 196 for complicating statewide rent assistance due to the funding cap it imposes on each county. Next, the unequal inheritance. For most older parents, it is simpler to leave each adult child the same inheritance. But is equal always equitable? For many, the answer is no. And as the pandemic drives people to draft or update their estate plans, more are confronting that question. Consider the dilemma that one of Elizabeth Candido Petit's clients faced last year. Petit, an estate planning lawyer in Westfield, New Jersey, said the parents, who have three adult children, felt very strongly about giving more to one child because she needed it more. The child, a daughter, had been laid off during the pandemic. And though the parents were helping her pay current expenses, Petit said they also foresaw that she would always need extra help. Their other two adult children were in higher-paying careers. The two siblings did not object. The family talked it through and everyone was on the same track, she said. While leaving equal inheritances is the norm, many parents, like Petit's clients, appear open to bequeathing their adult children different amounts. Two-thirds of Americans 55 and older said a child who provided them care should get a bigger inheritance than children who did not, according to a 2018 survey by Merrill Lynch Wealth Management and the consultant Age Wave. The survey also found that one in four parents said an adult son or daughter who has children should receive more than a child who does not. Lisa Hanks, an estate planning lawyer in Mountain View, California, said she asked clients to consider what was fair. For some, that means leaving the same asset amounts to everyone. Others want to leave more to a child with a disability. Or a parent may be wary about giving a spendthrift son the same as his responsible sister, she said. How do you define equity? It is different for different families, said Hanks, author of Every Californian's Guide to Estate Planning. But unequal inheritances can trigger sibling fighting after a parent dies. Some feuds end up in court, especially if an adult child suspects a parent was the target of what lawyers consider to be undue influence by the brother or sister who benefited most. There is a little seed of doubt that my sibling made mom change her estate. It can destroy relationships, said Cynthia Griffin, a lawyer in Elizabethtown, Kentucky. To head off sibling strife, parents should explain their decision to each child individually or as a group, or even seek mediation, said Arlene Cardias, co-founder of Elder Decisions in Norwood, Massachusetts, which helps families reach decisions on inheritance, caregiving, and other age-related issues. Cardias mediated one case in which the father asked two successful sons how they would feel if he left a larger inheritance to a third son who had financial and health issues. The two sons decided they would rather see their struggling brother receive more than possibly have him seek their financial help later. Both brothers wanted to have a good relationship with their brother and did not want to be responsible for him, Cardias said. One frequent reason for leaving different shares to balance out substantial support a parent gave a child over the years, perhaps for graduate school or a house purchase. Equalization of past gifts is common, Hank said. Parents want these gifts to be considered an early inheritance. Parents who go this route, she said, should remind heirs of past outlays by documenting them in the estate plan. If the largesse was a loan, a promissory note should be reflected in the will, Griffin said. The note should show whether the borrower repaid the parent or how much is left on the loan, which could be deducted from the child's share of the estate. When the parents ignore past gifts and opt for equal shares, children who receive less help during the parent's life may resent that decision, lawyers say. In one mediation, Cardosa said the mother planned to give each of her four children the same shares. One daughter who had no children objected, claiming she wanted a larger distribution because her parents had paid for camp and other costs for her siblings' children. The daughter eventually came around. The next day, Cardosa said the daughter told her family, "I listened to everybody, and it occurred to me that even though I do not have children of my own, my grandmother paid for my education. If my mother wants to pay for her grandchildren, she should." The equalization approach may be an option for parents who regularly bailed out a financially irresponsible child. No matter what parents leave the spendthrift child, lawyers suggest that they set up a trust that could, depending on the state, restrict the release of funds and the use for the money. Estate lawyers say some parents want to leave something extra to an adult child who is the primary caregiver, such as a larger cash distribution, life insurance proceeds, or perhaps the house if the child moved in. But siblings do not always agree on what experts call caregiver equity. Some families are fine with that. Joan stayed home and took care of Mom and Dad, so she should get the house, said Harry Margulies, an estate lawyer in Boston. Others may say Joan saw a good thing and she quit her job and then got the house. Margulies recalled one case in which the parents gave a daughter money to buy a larger house to accommodate them and her family. She would keep the house when they died. Her siblings did not object to her getting something more for caregiving, but she was also spending money on home health aides. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.